Hello and welcome to Don't Give Up Your Daydream, Transitions in a Transitioning World. You are listening to Don't Give Up Your Daydream on XRQK Los Angeles, KNJO, and Airtime America. Today's program is managed and directed by Storyteller Campfire's programs and are heard in over 100 countries around the world.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Hello, welcome back. I'm your host, John Knuckle. I'm a private equity advisor, slash author, slash radio host. And here at Don't Give Up Your Daydream, our goal is to introduce you to guests who have been through transitions in their lives, careers, and have landed in a better place. All of them have kept their creativity alive, and that has been vital to their success. I am so excited to get started today. It is going to be a great show since we have one of New York City's top career coaches and motivational speakers, Lois Barth. Lois is a motivational humorist, coach, and provocateur. Yes, we're going to have some fun today. Please welcome the very provocative Lois Barth. Hey, Lois.
Well, hello there, John. How are you?
I'm doing good. We're going to do a lot of work, and we're going to talk a lot, but before we roll up our sleeves, why don't you tell us what you're up to now? What's going on with you?
Well, you know, it's so funny that you should bring up provocateur, because I have a very thought-provoking new webisode series called Smart Sexy TV, what nobody talks about, but everyone needs to hear. And it's going to be launched early mid-September. It's seven webisodes on really what stops us from really realizing our most fulfilled self. I say it's sort of like Carol Burnett meets Wayne Dyer, I got to say, and it's going to be really fun. I know, right? What a stretch there. And really fun, really thought-provoking, and really about a bigger conversation of looking at the little things in life, John. But if we don't address the little things, as you know, they become the big things. So how to really start taking those on in our life.
Now, as Carol Burnett, I know this is going to age me a little bit, but are you going to wear, like, the drapes as a dress, like Carol Burnett did when she walked down those stairs?
Costumes. It's funny you should say that, because the set does have stairs, and there are drapes behind me. So let's just say I've been very influenced by Carol.
Okay.
But I don't know that there's going to be a pole horizontally behind me, but pretty wacky characters, I have to say.
Wow. Well, listeners, that was not rehearsed. It just came out that way. All right, so let's talk about now. You're at a place now, but, you know, like most of us, it all started somewhere. So where did this journey to get to where you are, where did it begin?
Well, you know, it's so interesting you should ask me that, John. I've always been fascinated by personal growth and human development. I used to kid around with my mom because I'd say, you know, my mom would say, you know, Lois, people are like computers. What you get depends on all the buttons that you pick or you select. And I'd say, Ma, can you just pass the Lucky Charms and can we not have breakfast to be a learning moment? You know, but that's who my parents were. They were obsessed with personal growth and human development, and I'm very grateful to them. So from a very early age, I became fascinated with human development. I am a human potential junkie. And so I first started off in acting, playing different characters, one-woman show, arts education, was part of a three-person storytelling trunk show for many years to create literacy and diversity and self-esteem through literature. And then also I did my own one-woman shows. I did stand-up comedy. And I was always really fascinated. I was also had a massage therapy practice at the same time. And, you know, John, my access point was always how do people grow and develop? And what stops people and what is the gateway for them to really realize their best self? And so it was really more like the healing arts and the creative arts. But then when I transitioned to coaching and speaking and writing, you know, it was, it was a career translation as opposed to a career transition. I took my same skill sets and just moved it into a different venue.
Okay. So now I'm thinking like at the beginning, I have this visual in my mind of you standing, doing your stand-up as a young woman, and I'm sure it was a packed house every night and you were like hanging with rock stars and going to the clubs, right? Is that how it worked?
Oh, yeah. Thunderous applause, like limousines waiting outside. And yeah, the whole nine yards. No, there were many nights that it was like three people, two of which were relatives. Yeah, no, there were definitely some, there were some lean nights and there were some, you know, packed houses. You know yourself, John, it's a slippery road when you consistently go for your dreams and reinvent yourself. Yeah. It's not a linear path.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, it just reminds me, you saying that reminds me, when I was first dating my wife, we were in a gym in Manhattan, and I had comedy night. So we decided to go, and we show up at this little club, and there's one other couple there, four people.
Wow.
And the comedian comes out, and it's Ray Romano.
Wow.
You know, everyone loves Ray. And it just makes me think now, you know, I just had a book reading couple of years ago and only eight people show and I was devastated, but at least I always have Ray to count on to make me feel better. But it is tough at first. I'm sure you could expand on that.
Absolutely. And you know what, John, in a lot of ways it's ongoing. I mean, even when Seinfeld, who's the great icon of our times, I mean, they say that Seinfeld was considered the most successful sitcom in the history of TV, which I would suffice as absolutely true. Even when he decided to give up his show, and he did a documentary on it called Comedian, he decided to ditch all of his material and start from scratch, you know, and bomb a lot. I mean, he's a pretty fearless guy, and he definitely, you know, wasn't, he was Jerry. He wasn't the great Seinfeld, right? It's ongoing. It's an ongoing journey, and I think that that's one of the things that stops people sometimes is that we have this illusion that, you know, we've hit a certain point, and yet if we're going to take something on, we forget to connect back to our beginner's mind, which is we're building, and it's still starting from scratch. It's kind of both.
So you know, I like to ask my guests, you know, a lot of the people listening are sort of at a roadblock or in the middle of a transition and don't know where to go, and so what is it? What is the motivation? What makes you different than other people that, you know, you do, most people you do a comedy show and three people show up and, you know, they say, well, maybe this isn't for me. I'll go work at Walmart or something, you know? Like, what is the motivation that kept, that made you show up to that next show? Metaphorically, of course.
Yeah, I think tenacity, but I, you know what? I said it was a gift and a curse. my dream just wouldn't die. It just, I kept trying to avoid it, and the dream of just how much I loved taking everyday occurrences and transforming them into learning lessons and laughter. There was a wonderful comedian that once said, comedy is tragedy plus time. And humor to me was such an extraordinary art form where you could take something that could just have happened last week, and it was painful, and with time and perspective, you could laugh at it. And so that dream of really, even less than the stand-up, John, but that dream of taking something in life and transforming it and teaching and educating and inspiring people, plus making them laugh at it, it just wouldn't go away. And I'm really grateful it didn't. So I think it was just the dream kept surfacing and tenacity. And I have to say I really made sure to surround myself with pretty positive people that kept saying,
oh, that's very important,
yeah, you can do that. You're funny.
Oh, yeah.
You make me think. You got to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that is true. That's a very good point. You know, I was wondering, you know, and
yeah,
I meet so many people from many different walks of life who have different creative things that they do, and there's always a way where it links to their profession in some way. And I was just wondering, how does being on stage, doing one-woman shows, how does this translate to, you know, being like the high-level transition person that you are?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And people always say to me, wow, your career is very eclectic. And I say, well, it is eclectic, but it's almost like a holographic picture, you know, kind of like a hologram, because when you look at it from different perspectives, the whole, it may look like a different color or a different hue, but it's still part of the whole picture. And so for me, I have always been fascinated with how people grow and develop. And the combination of entertainment and educating has always lit me up. You know, they actually have a term for it now called edutainment, and that's what I love that term. And
cool.
For me, it was I knew that I was ready to transition out of stand-up. I think, first of all, the lifestyle was so grueling, the hours, it was so antithetical to who I am. But people would start coming up to me after my shows of stand-up, and they'd say, I learn so much from you. Your stand-up inspires me. And the other comedians were like, oh, kiss of death, kiss of death. The goal is making people laugh. Hello. And I was so much more entranced by, it was so much more meaningful that somehow somebody was leaving and affected by my work, by what I had to say. And I think in terms of the career transition, John, what really breaks my heart, and the statistics are staggering, 83% of all people in America don't like what they do for a living. And you spend more hours in a day doing what you do for a living than any other thing, than spending time with your spouse, your loved ones, your kids, sleeping. And when you think of commuting, getting ready. And I just said, wow, that is so sad to me, to spend the bulk of your time. Because I feel people are truly gifted, and we all have, we're just these walking treasure chests that have all these amazing gifts and talents and passions. And not to be able to express them through our work is, to me, a tragedy, especially being a first world country. We have that privilege. Other countries in the world don't have that privilege. So that's what brought me to the career transition piece, is that so many people were so unhappy with what they were doing. They were very smart and talented, and I said, let's find a way for you to love what you're doing.
I was just thinking, I read a quote by you, and I don't know where I read it, but I would like for you to clarify it for our listeners, and that is, you've been quoted as saying, never give your power away. Now, what is that about?
Yes, I know, it's a little esoteric. I appreciate you asking me that. I think that, well, I know that innately as human beings we're really powerful. And how you know that is somebody could walk up to you and they don't even say a word, and you could either be inspired in their presence or you want to detour to the local fruit and cheese platter, right? We all know those. We've been at parties. And you go, oh, my God, I got to get out of here, and the person hasn't even said a word. Well, that's power. That's just a misuse of your power. right, that you can have that kind of effect on another human being. So I feel that often, and that's why my work is female-focused but male-friendly, I feel that often women do things, and some men, definitely, to give away our power. So what do I mean by that? Lessen our credibility, second-guess ourselves, send messages that undervalue who we are and what we bring to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you let go of your power, or you don't own it. Somebody gives you a compliment and you dismiss it, you deflect it. You find ways to undermine who you are and what you bring to the world and to the people you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, and you know, from what I know of you and your work, I mean, there's a lot of you know, work that goes into this. You don't
tremendous.
You don't just spout platitudes and people are inspired, although, you know, I was just inspired 10 seconds ago. But anyway.
Well, I'm glad. That's my
job,
baby.
For you to get
That's
to this
yacht.
Level. Yeah, really. Oh, you did it again. At least some of you were trying to be funny. You know, you're just actually trying. But anyway, you had to get multiple certifications and take classes. You know, this isn't just... You didn't just say, I want to be a transition expert. How does that all work? The logistics, you know, we have to talk about the grunt work occasionally.
Absolutely. As they say in The Karate Kid, wax on, wax off, right?
That's right.
It's the daily in the trenches. So as I mentioned, I mean, I'll just kind of go through what my process was, which I think would be hopefully helpful to the listeners.
No, absolutely. Go ahead.
You know, with coaching, people, you know, say all the time, you get rich in your niche and, you know, get yourself really specialized. And we no longer have ADD specialists. We have ADD specialists for left-handed clients, left of the heartland, who are left-handed.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
Thursday,
so ridiculous, right? You don't have a foot specialist.
Yeah.
You have a toe specialist now. It's become crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Micro niche.
One for a specialist for each toe.
Exactly.
I only do the big toe on the right foot.
Exactly. So, and I always say niches are like puppies at the pound. They pick you versus you picking them. And what I really found is one of my greatest challenges and my assets, I always say our greatest assets are our greatest liabilities and vice versa, is that I am constantly seeing the interconnectedness of things in life. I can't not see the interconnections. So, for example, I got my first certification, and it was holistic life coaching, which every session we take a different area of your life. You learn what the model is. It's called the empowerment model, and the first three steps are foundational, and then the next nine go into different areas of your life. And it was just a wonderful overview of going into a different quadrant or area of your life every session. People found it incredibly valuable. They had breakthroughs. But then what happened, John, was people started to come to me and they were really stopped in their career. They couldn't sometimes access the other areas of their life because they were so flattened by who they were and what they were doing. And so at that point, I said, okay, it's time for additional training. So I went and I got career transition, life direction change training to become a coach and authorized in that area. And then as people started to come to me, you know, I found that what's really stopping people more and more, in addition to career, was relationships, both single and those in couples and married. Mm-hmm. So I went about becoming certified in both in relationship, both for singles and couples, learned assessment tools, learned to strengthen communication tools. And so I just kept going deeper. And then next what happened is I found that a lot of women, shocking as it might seem to you, John, that they thought they knew a lot about men, but actually, shock of all shocks, they didn't. And
wow,
some
that
of them
is shocking.
Didn't. I know. Aren't you shocked?
Just tell us what to do. Don't you know that?
Didn't you know that, right? So I ended up getting...
You're in charge.
That's right. What a shock.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting, not certified, but I ended up doing the PACS work, which is Alison Armstrong's work. And the way she explains it, she's brilliant. She's a pioneer. And she says that men don't know anything about women, but they know they don't. And women think they know everything about men, but they don't, which I think was really great. And it really trained me to educate women about certain assumptions that they were making around men, and as a result, it was really stopping them in their dating. And that was invaluable. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered that what was stopping people from making changes in their life were they were not handling their anxiety well. And so I decided to get additional certification with Dr. Sarah Denning. She's a clinical psychologist who specializes in anxiety management. It's the ABH model, and I became a certified training of her technique. And now we're heading up these corporate wellness programs. And so, yeah, that was the trajectory, and it's definitely been ongoing. So I kind of kept matching my greatest passions with my client's deepest interest and need.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, obviously, you're passionate about it, and you you know, you put in the time and the work. But what I find is that this is how it comes back around to the creative, which is what I like to talk about on the show.
Sure.
Is now you're obviously a very creative spirit.
Yeah.
But there isn't, I don't think it's really, well, not with you. With some people it's more specific, but you have a very creative outlook or a very creative viewpoint of life, and that's what flows through, you know, your work. But I try to, can you speak a little towards, like, creativity and, you know, the person who knows painting in his basement or working on pottery or taking a night quest to learn poetry, how does that creative spirit and that willingness to tap into it and to try to improve upon it, how does that flow through their professional life or even their personal life? I, you know, I'm sure you work a lot with that, so if you could, you know, maybe give us some ideas on that.
Absolutely. It's a really great question, John, and I'm really glad you asked it. You know, we live in a very kind of linear black and white society as much as we're trying to, you know, take on more creative, I don't know, filters and, you know, pursuits in our life. And when people say to me, I'm not creative, I say, guess what? You're a card-carrying member of the Human Being Club. You are creative by nature. You don't have to, you can't, you can try and discount your creativity, but I ain't buying it. So everybody is creative. No matter what, if you've never picked up a paintbrush or gone on a dance floor, you're creative because creativity has to start with a mindset. And it's a way of looking at things in different ways of shifting, being willing to shift your perspective. So I love the example you gave because we can easily become very static. There's a term in the empowerment model called a static mindset where you look at things statically, black and white, and nothing in nature is black and white. I mean, oak trees don't lose their oak trees don't lose their leaves and go, oh my goodness, I'm done. You know, no, they're going to grow back, right?
Yeah.
Everything in nature works on cycles and it's infinitely creative and it's no different for human beings. So, for example, somebody who paints in their basement, but then maybe goes to an accounting job, and maybe it's soul crushing for them right now. And what I would say to them is, perhaps you need to change professions. Perhaps not. Perhaps you need to start looking at where you are in the creative process with your painting and how can you use that mindset to bring it to the table in what a field that feels so disparate like accounting. So am I answering your question in terms of what you're asking?
I am so on board with that, I think, but I just wanted, you know, I wanted the listeners to hear from someone, you know, as qualified as you. You know, I look at, in my journeys now, since I've started writing, I've met so many people who are, you know, I know a voiceover actor who's an electrician.
Absolutely.
I know a painter, the gentleman who painted the cover of my last book, he's an architect.
Right.
And you know what? These are the engaged, exciting, interesting. Those are the people, you know,
absolutely,
you don't turn away from to the cheese platter at the party.
Absolutely.
Because they're the people that are engaged, you know, and that I think is a key for people now who are maybe struggling at the moment to stay engaged.
You're absolutely right, John, and it's really bringing all of that to the table. And now that they're doing it, it seems like we're going to have more centenarians than ever in the history. It used to be 10,000, and now I think we're well over the 100,000 mark. And what they've done studies, they've done studies, and there's anywhere from about 5 to 6, depending upon which study you read, of criteria for people who, and I'm not saying who are 100 and just existing. I'm saying 100 and they're actually fully functioning and vibrant. And creativity in all of the studies is always one of the pieces. In fact, they just had the oldest Holocaust survivor just passed away, and they did a documentary. I think it was called Apartment 6A or it's some apartment. And she, you know, lost her career through the war, but even she died at 107, and she died during the filming of the documentary, which won an Oscar. And she was playing 2.5 hours a day at 107. And people would, she had visitors every single day. And and she said music, and it's a German title, but the translation is music kept me alive. And so that's what it is. Creativity and longevity go hand in hand. So I couldn't agree.
I know when I first started when I first started putting this theory or this idea, when I first started putting it into my head and having it become part of my credo, a while back I bought a DVD of Cream, the band Cream, playing a reunion show at Wembley Stadium. And so maybe it was 10, 15 years ago. And so it's Eric Clapton and Ginger Baker and Jack Bruce. And now of the three of them, Clapton at the time, I guess he still is, was recording and touring and doing shows and all that. And now they're all the same age. They all did the same crazy drugs. They all led that whole lifestyle.
Sure.
And Eric Clapton must look 20 years younger than the other two guys. You know,
the
other two were just sitting home getting residuals, you know, and smoking cigarettes or whatever. And he looked, you know, he stood up. The other guys were leaning on stools. He stood up, and he was dressed better. His hair looked like everything about it. And
it's incredible.
You can't attribute to anything else than you know, because he famously almost died from overdosing a number of times also. So it's very
true.
Cool. It really is.
And
okay,
he also,
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish up.
No, and when you think about the loss that he endured with his child, like losing his child.
Yeah.
And
so in
the end, the creativity won out. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and what does he do? He does something creative as a result of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very cool. Okay, we have to take a break here. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Lois, and please stay with us.
Great.
What if you got rewarded for every good decision? What if your heart had a special way of letting you know it appreciates your healthy choices?
Oh, I've got to get my family to eat more vegetables.
Amazing!
And instead of cooking with butter tonight, I think I'll saute our veggies with a heart-healthy oil.
You're a genius!
So really, would your food choices pay off in heart health? Did you know that when you replace bad fats with healthier fats, like those in canola or other vegetable oils, it can lower bad cholesterol levels, and that's good for your heart. Here's a winning idea. Take up the challenge for good health, because the you of the future will say,
fantastic!
Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info proudly supports the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Hi, we're back with Lois Barth at Don't Give Up Your Daydream. Now, Lois, I know that you are a published writer, a motivational speaker, a YouTube entrepreneur. And I was going to just use that as my intro to you coming back from the break, but I want to ask how I know you you have a few articles in Self Magazine and other magazines. How did you first become a published writer?
Well, a lot of different ways, but let's see. I've been part of three different anthologies, and it was really a combination of just relationship building. You know, I spoke. I was interviewed. I was a source expert. I was life coach for Fitness Magazine's Fitness Makeover, which was the longest makeover campaign in the history of women's magazines. It was a one-year makeover. It was incredibly intense. It was wonderful. And so people got to know about who I am and what I'm up to. So I would say the anthologies were a lot of collaboration around just sharing my message and people feeling like it was really resonant with theirs. And so I got invited to be part of three anthologies. And then my first piece, talk about beginner's luck, is the first piece I ever published was in the New York Times.
Wow.
Which is kind of crazy. And I felt just really passionate. I was on a film. It was Drew Barrymore's film, Driving Cars with Boys, and they were throwing food out, and I couldn't focus because my mother would invent names of third world countries that were starving.
So wait,
to get
you were working as an actress on the film?
Yes, I was working as an actress.
Okay.
And like I said, my mom would literally invent names of third world countries that were starving in order to get me to eat my vegetables. So waste not, want not was like a total understatement. And we were in a very rough area of New Jersey, and I said, you know, somebody's going to bed hungry tonight. I can't tolerate this. And I did a little investigation, and I found out that there were laws that, you know, prevent any liability of gifting food, and I found a local pantry, and I wrote a piece, which was renamed, but the initial name of the piece was Leaving Hunger on the Cutting Room Floor, which was basically creating a strategic partnership with a food pantry down the block. And she literally, I mean, it was so sweet, John, because I called her and she was very cute. And she was like, honey, I think you're an angel because I asked God, our pantry's out of food, and what are we going to do? And there you go, calling. And there she shows up. She's like 4'11", and she shows up with her husband at 3 in the morning in the worst section of Jersey. And she's the lovely woman, Grace Robinson. And so the piece was so magical, the moment was so magical, and I pitched it to the New York Times. And 2 days later, they called me and said, would you be, we'd like to publish your piece. And I was on the set, and I was pinching myself, and I was also touring with a storytelling show and working on a film with Drew Barrymore, and the piece got published, and I was like, I'm exhausted, but it don't get any better than this, so, you know.
Well, see,
so
here's a good tip for people, you know, and you won't say it yourself, but see, you told that story with so much passion, that that is a good tip also, is if you're passionate about what you're doing, what you're pursuing, it's going to come out. You know, the New York Times accepted that because of the emotion you had behind it, I would assume.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And dispelling a myth, because when I first went on the set, they said, oh, I'm sorry, we can't donate the food. There'll be liability issues. And then I found out this was a... So I think it's passion. And I also think, you know, well, you know this, obviously, John, being an experienced and successful writer, but you also, if you're going to pitch articles to newspapers or publications, you've got to also talk about what's a current trend. So the fact that, you know, it was a time when we were looking at, in history, you know, how can we support people, especially in marginalized communities? How can we dispel myths? So it actually worked very in tandem with, you know, what was going on in the history. And was a nice human interest story as well. So you got to, you know, people used to say to me, do you write your own material? And I said, no, life does. I just sit on the side with a pen. Now it's an iPad, right? And an open eye.
Yeah.
You know, but
well, you mentioned Jersey. See, now you have the poets out here. Don't say nothing at all. They just stand back and let it all be.
Yeah.
Full screen for you.
You just got to watch, you know. You just got to pay attention
great.
To what shows up in life. You got to build strategic relationships. It's very important. And passion is really important. And just really tenacity and audacity. Yeah. I mean, you see, it's often it's not necessarily always the most talented people. It's the hardworking. I mean, in your case, John, of course, it's both. It's hardworking and wildly talented, but that's not always the exception. You know, that's not always the case, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. And thank you for that compliment, by the way. Anyway, because I don't want to give away my...
Don't give away your power, John. So I just complimented you. Take it, dude.
No, I'm not a good learner here. You tell me the whole thing, and then you say something nice, and I say, yeah, well, anyway.
Yeah, you deflect. Well, but I'm so glad this... But, John, this is a learning moment right here. See, you're somebody who's seasoned. You work very hard. You're good at what you do. You're great at promotion. And even you, right, you deflected a compliment.
That's right.
And so that's one of my webisode series is called Don't Tap Dance Around Your Power, Own It. There's actually going to be a little tap dance segment in it. And so we do it unconsciously. So thank you for, boy, that could have been like a plant, but it just happened so organically.
No, that's true. And I just noticed it because I had my notes written down. I came across that sentence again, and I'm like, here I am. And by the way, are you actually going to tap dance in this?
I'm not going to, but I have...
Oh.
I have two wonderful tap dancers because I love, you know, I'm a cornball at heart. And as long as you're saying valuable things, if you could do it in a playful way that makes people laugh. And I don't like mean-spirited humor. I don't find it funny. So I think things that could really tickle your funny bone and open your heart, that's the type of humor that really lights me up.
That's great. It's all great. Now, here's a phrase that you've heard a lot lately, and I just used to describe you, so I think people would like clarification, and that is the phrase YouTube entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
How does one become a YouTube entrepreneur?
Well, I'm working on it. So I'm definitely, it's a wax on, wax off, and a long way to go. And But there's a couple different ways, John. And I mean, I'm looking at people who are real icons in the YouTube space, and now of course, you know, obviously Google owns YouTube, so they are very YouTube friendly for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And now Facebook is looking to leverage their own equivalent of a YouTube channel. So there's this whole media war. There's also a statistic that I think your listeners would be really interested in hearing, John, which is. In 5 to 6 years, 80% of all content on the Internet will be through video.
Wow.
So, you know, for those of us who are still hanging on to our word processors, believe me, I just threw out my 8-track last year, metaphorically. I am a Luddite. I have to admit it. I'm a recovering Luddite. You got to get to the program in a way that is true to you. And important, meaningful. So to answer your question in a rather long-winded way, I have been studying people out there who are really impacting the Marie Forleos, the Gabrielle Bernsteins, the Blog Academy, Gala Darlings, the Ramit, I won't even attempt to say his last name. I mean, Seth Godin. I mean, it just goes on. Randy Gage. I mean, I could just go on and on. And there's a couple of ways. So are you asking me how they monetize it or how they actually go about it?
No, I'm just, you know, it's just how do you become a YouTube person? You know, I asked my daughters this, who are 20 and 18. They know everything, of course.
Right.
So I said, how does something, become popular through that platform? And they just say, well, it goes viral. Well, how does it go viral? You know, what does it all mean?
Yeah, I'm going to have to challenge that a little bit from my research, which is viral is a very generic term. Of course, more is less, and yet not always. I'm a big fan of Seth Godin, The Tribes. I've been reading it and devouring it. He's one of the most influential people in the entire blogosphere. And he basically said that going viral is overrated, not to poo-poo it at all, but you can get viral with, you know, stupid pet tricks. And that doesn't mean you're going to get a show. It just means, that has 6 million views. Thank you very much. The best thing I find is, you know, I heard a wonderful, I'm going to paraphrase it, but your calling is your greatest passion meets the world's greatest hunger. And that's somebody's calling, and I really love that.
Yeah.
So even if it's even if it's content that you or I may not resonate with, when it's something that we are passionate about and that we're expert, and it hits a nerve of something mm-hmm. that people really crave and need, mm-hmm. then what you start developing, and I'm learning the distinctions from Seth Godin, quite frankly, he says, then you learn what's called a true fan versus a fan.
Yeah.
And you uh-huh. want to go after fans that are proactive and they're on fire about who you are and what you do. And it's really not about you, John. It's a movement that you're creating.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the movement I'm looking to create, which is mm-hmm. empowerment can be fun. It could be creative. Yeah. It doesn't mean to be, I've got to work on myself. It's like one more thing on the things to do list, right? You know, to look at the things in life that really take us out of our life. So I'm going to be talking about covert communication, how to kvetch responsibly, right? I'm going to talk about, and there is a way to kvetch responsibly. So I'm going to talk about a lot of things that people are uncomfortable talking about, but I'm going to create an arena that will create what I call a laugh and learn environment. So I think it's about, in terms of YouTube, get the content out, but be really clear who you are, what do you want to provide for your viewers.
Yeah. See, my financial side of me would say that you have to show, my financial side of my life would say that you have to show your value proposition. You know, people
Absolutely.
Have to see some value in following you or in you know, believing in you.
Well, that's what I love about your work, John. You know, I call you the financial curmudgeon in the nearest, dearest parts of my heart, because you not only know so much about wealth management and finance, but you know, I've been following you for years and studying. We, of course, know each other and stuff, but. It's you are so, your integrity, you have such extraordinary integrity, and you have such a fighting spirit for justice and fairness and educating the underdog who doesn't know the little nuances and ways they're getting
mm-hmm.
slammed. You
mm-hmm.
you know, and that combines both your passion and, quite frankly, if I may say so, like your outrage for what they don't know that they don't know and how it could really sidetrack people. And I feel that way about human development. And I think both of them are very important parts of your brand and the gifts that you bring to your audiences and to the people who read your articles. And, you know,
that's
I mean,
really I... Focus on. So enough about me. What do you think of my books? No.
Well, I have
I
to tell you, I am
going to
put in a little plug. Sorry, so you're going to have to own your power. I have to tell you, Vic, I am terrified of thrillers, and I had just finished a motivational keynote down in Maryland, and I had 2 hours left to sit by the beach or to read your book, and it was a darn page-turner. I said, I lost the last 2 hours of beach in Ocean City, Maryland because of the Vic, and it was worth it because I just fell in love with all the characters, and they were human, and they were real, and they were edgy, and many of them were the characters you love to hate, and you still fight for them in the end, so... There it is.
Right,
I'm going to give you a plug whether you like it or not.
Thank you very much, and I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to defray from your compliment.
Okay.
Thank you. But I want to get back to, you know, we're on the, you know, the internet, and you know, and this is a big part, everything being on video, and you have a phrase, mental bandwidth. Now, you explained it to me once, but I think our listeners should hear about that. What do you mean by mental bandwidth?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. We have a lot of misconceptions around moving forward in life. And I say to my clients, and, you know, my new brand or my soft rebrand called The Courage to Sparkle, Creating a Life That Lights You Up. And what really puts us, what I call, on dimmers versus shimmers is we don't... We may look at how long something takes in time. Well, I want to write a book, so if I allocate an hour and a half a day over blah, 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 it will take this long. And that's great, and that's important. But what we don't look at is mental bandwidth. So what do I mean by that? On a computer, if you want to do all kinds of fancy graphics, you may not have the bandwidth, right? So you got to go to the computer, you got to get more RAM, you got to get more of those Who's a Little Tools, which I don't even know the name of because I'm not that technologically savvy.
All those things in the Google machine.
Exactly, the bells and whistles. Well, it's no different in your own life. So let's say you say, I have this dream to do this historical fiction piece, and this is what my life looks like right now. And by the way, I know nothing about that piece of history, but it intrigues me. Oh, and by the way, I have chronic negative self-talk that I can't do this. That goes in all, that's all part of the recipe of your mental bandwidth that you must regard. You have to consider. So it's really the amount of mental juice something takes up. It's not just the time. It's the mental juice. So, for example, these webisodes that I'm shooting, right, I've done 4 one-woman shows, and I got the shooting schedule, and my mental bandwidth went south because you don't shoot video in sequence. You shoot them by location. And I worked on the scripts as a script, right? So I had to rejigger. Yeah. I had to have a lot of talks with the director. I had to practice in every location. I had to allow extra time. So that's all part of it. So that's mental bandwidth. It's basically regarding the mental capabilities that it will take, as well as the emotions that might come up in pursuing it and holding a space for that.
And also the wasted storage space you're using in your computer that you really don't even need.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's another thing. And that is so important. I love Stephen Pressfield's work because he really talks about that a lot in a somewhat militant fashion. But you must look at what puts you on dimmers and what puts you on shimmers. So for some people, doing an hour of menial tasks actually allows them dream time to work on their book without writing. Other people, it flattens them. So if you're in, I'm going to get this book, you got to really treat yourself like an artist. If I'm going to be in that mode, you know what? You know, maybe I can get a personal assistant or a virtual assistant or pay my teenage kid X dollars an hour to do these 4 hours of grunt work that I just don't have the emotional and mental bandwidth to do. Yeah. So that's the thing you have to look at. Is it in your skill set? Is it a good use of your time? You must protect your time when you're taking a creative pursuit that takes a lot of mental and emotional bandwidth. It's imperative.
That's great. Let me ask you now, if someone now I feel like I've just been in like a session with you, so I want to ask you, because I'm getting a lot from this, I really am.
I
want to ask you is, if someone were to hire you for a one-on-one coaching session, what would it be like? Just in broad strokes.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I talk to people for 20 minutes to a half hour to understand their goals, to kind of learn how they learn, and to see if they're a fit, because I don't work with anybody who I can't provide value for. And obviously there has to be a fit. You know, a lot of it's also, not all, but a lot of it's chemistry. Do we click? So in that half hour, which is totally complimentary, because it's not in my integrity to take money for somebody I can't provide value for. And in that half hour, we talk about what are your goals, what are your needs, where are you now? And sometimes people come to me, they go, I'm miserable, and I know I want to do something different, and I have no idea what that is. And that's also, that's fine too. Or, boy, you know, I'm about to be an empty nester, and I'm going to have this time, and I want to make sure to use it well. I mean, it's a myriad of things. I mean, transitions are times of uncertainty, and sometimes you don't know. You really don't know, and sometimes you do know, and you just have to give yourself permission to know. That's a big one, too. So in that 30 minutes, I'm kind of, for me, duct tape on the mouth, and I do a heck of a lot more listenings than I do talking. I just ask some questions, and I listen. And we look at where the areas are. And while the bulk of my work is career transition / career translation, sometimes people reveal to me, and by the way, these are the big things in my relationship. So those are going to be what I call the access point to where we start the coaching. And so once we decide that it's a fit and I go over the logistics, and I work virtually, I work with people all over the world, and I also work in person, I send them a pretty robust questionnaire, and that was one term that several clients have used, and because I really want to get to know somebody as well as I can. And
yeah,
everything from circadian rhythms, when do they function the best, how many hours a week do they network, how much do they want to be making, what are their goals, what are their beliefs around transition. And then we take the first session to really go and do a deep dive through the questionnaire. And then we mm-hmm. set out a course on based on scheduling and budget, on frequency. And it's really like a roadmap. It's it's a roadmap, but like when you're sailing, where you'll still get to your destination, but just you have to realize that 97% of the time you're off course. And that's just the nature of things. You never go in a straight line when you sail because you'll end up on the other side of the equator. And so that's part of the process that people need to learn in coaching, is that, you know, it's not linear. And if they keep being attached to it being linear, they're going to constantly get down on themselves. And that really breaks my heart, because people grow in an organic way. So that's what the process looks. People usually, when they first start working with me, it's usually a 3 to 6 month commitment. But people will come to me, you know, sometimes somebody has a big interview coming up, or they're getting more media and they want to bring their full self to the interview. So we can do a few sessions on interview skills training or media, how are you presenting yourself. But most
sometimes
of the,
you need a checkup.
Sometimes you need a checkup, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that's how I work. But most of the time when people come to me for career transition / translation, or they're building their business, it's our work really will be in kind of 3 to 6 month segments. But I'm structured but flexible based on what people need.
That's great. Now the other thing is... the big part of what you do is your motivational speaking. So if a group or a person would hire you to be a motivational speaker, besides the tap dancing.
Sure. Right?
How would it go? I mean, seriously, how you get on stage, what's your focus? What's going on?
Well, my signature keynote that I get hired the most for is called The Courage to Sparkle, Creating a Life That Lights You Up. And it could work in many different industries. I've done it in the financial industry. I've worked for the Navy, believe it or not. I mean, and 90-day training program. So what my goal is to really make empowerment fun and to create a space where people can come away feeling inspired. I always say people learn best in an environment that's upbeat, creative, and fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so my programs are very interactive. And they usually involve some movement. You don't have to dance. Believe me, no dancing, I promise. But I believe that people learn by embodying certain concepts rather than just head learning. Head learning only gets us only so far. So I give people interactive exercises that allow them to actually take on different premises and different principles. And it's really about looking in your life at giving yourself permission to shine, both the inner negative self-talk that's stopping you, but then the real logistical stuff too. You know, what are the things that you need to do on a practical daily basis? The way I say it is powerful solutions delivered in a playful way. So what is it? So somebody can come away saying, you know what, I haven't been taking my business seriously. I haven't been taking my art seriously, and I'm going to allocate X dollars to fire myself from jobs that aren't worth my time, or I'm going to set more boundaries, or, wow, I'm still living with that third grade teacher that told me I didn't write well, and as a result, I'm not respecting my time. I'm letting that stop me, or I'm letting the I'm too old to blah, 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 you know. So it's really a combination of the inner work and the logistical work.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. Now, you mentioned before we went on the air that you have a free article on transition that you've recently wrote that our readers could get their hands on, our listeners could get their hands
on. Absolutely. I am the metaphor maven. I love metaphors. I'm just a metaphor madwoman. I love it. So the reason why I say that is I love one of my keynotes is about the metaphor of the metamorphosis, and I call it a meltamorphosis, which is feels like you're melting down, having a meltdown, but what you really are is just breaking breaking open and reinventing yourself. So I have a free article anybody's interested in, which are using the arc of the metamorphosis to how it speaks to the human condition and reinventing yourself. So it's a seven-step process on how to metamorphosize, both personally and professionally. And I'd love to offer that to anybody who's interested. They can shoot me an email at lois@loisbarth.com, and I'm happy to send that article to them.
Wow. Oh, that's so great. That really is. Now, if people want to get in touch with you, I know that, well, could you a little more about the webinar series that's coming up? When's it going to start? Where can people find it? All of that. And also your website, your address.
Absolutely.
I'm sure people are going to be very interested. So.
Great.
Give it to us.
Join the tribe and subscribe to YouTube, to Smart TV. That's what it is, Smart and Sexy TV. And, well, basically, in terms of my YouTube channel, they can go on Lois Barth. Right now there's some standalone videos, but that is Smart Sexy TV, what nobody talks about but everyone needs to hear. That's going to be launching mid-September. And if they do want some notification on that when it launches, the best thing to do right now is to go on my YouTube channel. It's just Lois Barth. Again, it's just my older videos, but people seem to really like them. So just subscribe right now to YouTube channel Lois Barth. And then once Smart and Sexy TV rolls out, which will be mid-September, they're going to already get notifications. In terms of keeping in touch and getting my monthly tips on how to give yourself the courage to sparkle, they can basically go to loisbarth.org, O-R-G, and then there'll be a button right there to sign up for my newsletter. Obviously, at Lois Barth is my Twitter handle, and they can go on and see what I'm tweeting about. I'm going to be doing a lot of tweets. And if they want the article, they can go to lois@loisbarth.com, just write article/sparkle, and I'll know what it is. And I guess the only other thing is if they think that coaching is something that they're really interested in, John, they could shoot me an email, again, lois@loisbarth.com, and then just say 30-minute conversation, and we can set up a time to talk and hear what their goals are and see if coaching is a fit for them right now and how to proceed.
Wow, that's so great. Thank you so much for being here, Lois. It really was a great show. I know I was inspired. I'm sure our listeners were also. And I just want to thank you once again. And now I have a few words that I want to end the show with.
Okay. I just want to interrupt and say thank you. You are real.
You're
first of all, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been an absolute pleasure. And you totally inspire me. So thank you for what you do.
So nice. Thank you so much.
Sure.
So a few words for our listeners. A few years back, I was taking my daughters to school. As I drove through my tree-lined neighborhood, I noticed a man rummaging through the recyclable bins. He had a minivan parked down the block filled to capacity with giant plastic bags stuffed with bottles and cans. I didn't look down on him. Actually, I admired him. You see, I've been that guy. When I was a kid, my mother raised five of us in a two-bedroom apartment by herself. We didn't have much, and every once in a while, we would go out garbage picking. That's what we would call it. We would go out on the night that the bulk garbage would go out to the rich neighborhood. We'd look to pick up an end table or maybe a lamp. Well, one night, when I was getting a little older, I was out with her. As I helped her put a perfectly good chair into the back of our Chevy Malibu, she looked at my face. I was embarrassed, as most preteens are when out with a parent. This was worse, of course. What if one of my friends or someone from school spotted me? She didn't scold me, but she certainly didn't let me go home. She gave me some advice that has stuck with me for the rest of my life. Never be ashamed of working, she said. Never be ashamed of working. What a gift those words have been to me. Like you, many of my transitions were demotions, or at best, sideways moves. When I was downtown on 9/11, representing my employer, and they asked me to resign a few weeks later because I wasn't bringing in any new business, I didn't sue or file for disability. I latched on as an assistant with another financial advisor. Yes, that was me, the 41-year-old clerk in a suburban office. But I was working. When my first novel came out, it was hardly rejected because no one noticed it. No one bothered to open one of the hundreds of envelopes stuffed with my masterpiece and the heartfelt cover letter that went with it. I would have killed for rejection. That would have been much better than being ignored. So I published it myself, and I started a new one. Incidentally, that book was The Vig, which has gone on to sell thousands of copies, and was the winner of the Marvel Award for Literary Fiction. Where you're working isn't the most important thing if you're working, because it's not about where you are, it's where you're going. So what if you have to take a few stops along the way? If you ever meet Ray Romano, you can ask him about that. I know that if it all goes bad for me tomorrow, I will be out there an hour earlier than the guy on my street. I'll get those cans and get more than he ever could because I know all about garbage picking. Don't be ashamed of working and don't ever give up your daydream. I would like to thank all the listeners for joining us and those of you who went on to my website, johnknuckleauthor.com, and signed up and registered at don'tgiveupyourdaydream.webs.com website. It's nice to get feedback on the show, and I'll respond to emails, but sometimes it takes a little while, so thank you in advance for your patience. Don't Give Up Your Daydream is managed and directed by Storytellers Campfire Radio and broadcasts on our flagship station, XRQK Los Angeles, Airtime America, KNJO Thousand Oaks, and XRQK Media Group stations. You can learn more online at storytellerscampfire.org. Thank you all so much for listening in, and be well.